Last week we looked at this very special verse, Romans chapter 8, verse 18. And we looked at it really in a general respect as a standalone verse. A verse that in and of itself, without any of its context, can have significant meaning and impact in our hearts and our lives. My guess is that as I look out over the crowd, you're all old enough, even Ellie, to have gone through some difficulty in your life, to have suffered in some way something. And so when we read, "For I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed in us," that verse it's just chock full of hope. That whatever I'm going through, this thought of whatever I'm going through in this life, whatever I am struggling through, there's something better coming. You know, most of us can endure some difficulty, even maybe a lot of difficulty, or we can endure something bad, or we can endure something painful if we know that eventually something good is going to come from it. An athlete sweats, endures practice, trains tirelessly, endures pain. You've ever watched some of those athletes? I was watching one of my daughters run. And just before the start of the race on Friday, she turns to me and says, "Dad, my ankles are hurting. We need to buy tape." I'll tell you a secret. If my ankles are hurting, I just don't run. But Amy wants to run, so for the possibility that there could be a win at the end of that race, she will endure pain for the hope of something ahead. Many of you ladies have endured childbirth at least once, and many of you more than once. And you know the old saying, if guys were having babies, there would only be one. That's it. We're not doing that again. But the truth of the matter is, you ladies endure childbirth to have that little bundle of joy. Some of you parents have endured that little bundle of joy for years, with the hope that someday they will become respectable, godly young people. You've been through some stuff. Your children may have caused you some grief and some suffering. As I look out, I won't name any names, but I look at a few that are just into their adulthood who I know caused their parents some grief and suffering. And we as parents don't eat our young with the hope that it'll be worth it all. Right? Some of you have experienced financial setbacks and hardships. You have barely had enough to live on, and yet, because you were told that you should be putting some away for retirement, you took what you could easily and legitimately use to live life and you tried through pain to set money aside for the future. We often operate under that principle, pain now, glory later. And that is frequently a truth, isn't it? If we endure, if we stick with it, if we don't give up, if we go through the pain, it will eventually be worth it. That is a basic principle that we can take away from Romans chapter 8, verse 18, all by itself, as it stands alone. And there's wonderful encouragement in that. But I'm here to tell you that as encouraging as that can be, as wonderful as a verse is, can be all on its own, this verse is not a verse that stands all by itself. The reality is, if it was a verse that stood all by itself and we looked at it in that light, we would always have this idea that if we endured everything, it will always get better. But the truth of the matter is, in life, it doesn't always get better. NFL football players who throughout their career, even when they started as a child, would endure pain and suffering, would take a hit on the helmet, and would keep going because that's what their coach told them to do, and because they wanted to, because they wanted to endure so they could play football and someday be in the Super Bowl, and someday win the Super Bowl, never thought about that thing called concussions. Now we have football players and athletes, boxers that have major brain damage within their person because of that endurance. We have to be careful about taking verses and making stuff out of them all by themselves. I am here to tell you that there is a context for Romans 8:18. And though it is a wonderful standalone verse, it is very important for us to keep it in its context. For us to simply look at that verse and say, "For I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed in us," is a wonderful thing, but it's not enough. There is a context. There is both an immediate context, how it fits in Paul's argument in the book of Romans, and there is a broader context of how it fits into Scripture. While it may be true that when we stick out bad things, good things can come out of it, it isn't always true. And it's important to realize that is not, in the end, what Romans 8:18 is saying in its totality. As you look at this verse in its context, you begin to see a few things. And the first thing I would like to point out to you is that as we look at this context, you will see that there you will have friends. If you are truly suffering in the sense that this passage is talking about, you will have friends in that suffering. How many of you have ever heard the saying, "Misery loves company"? Okay? That old saying is maybe true here as we begin to realize and we look down through this passage and we begin to see who all is suffering. As we look at the context of this verse, we recognize that we're not alone in our suffering. First, we see in verse 17 that Christ suffered. Romans 8, verse 17, and if children, heirs also, heirs of God, and fellow heirs of Christ. Well, that sounds pretty good. Do you stand to inherit something? Well, according to this verse, if you are in Christ, you do. You stand to inherit something. That's wonderful. But read the rest of the verse. If indeed we suffer with him, so that we may also be glorified with him. Now, the reason I had us read John chapter 19 and the crucifixion of Christ is to begin to understand that Christ himself suffered. And that suffering was not light. It was not easy. It was very real. And it was very painful. The Word of God describes Jesus as being marred beyond recognition. Now think about that for a moment. Look at the person in this room that you know the best. Okay? If you had to identify that person, I'm always afraid of this. Raising children, seven daughters, I'm always afraid of one of them going missing. Now, the fear of them going missing is enough, but my greatest fear is that when they ask me what were they wearing, I'll be sitting there going, clothes. Because this is a big picture kind of guy, not a detailed kind of guy. In a lot of ways, I am an anomaly. I do have detail-oriented tendencies too in some things. But when it comes to my children's clothing, I couldn't tell you if they were wearing... I honestly, I'm not looking at any of my children right now. And the only one I know what they are wearing is because I don't like what she's wearing and I commented on it this morning. The rest of them, I couldn't tell you. And if I hadn't commented on her skirt, I couldn't have told you what she was wearing. And I've looked at them face to face. I've talked with them. Tell me, guys, I'm not the only one. Okay? As we look at this passage, it's important for us to first and foremost understand that Jesus Christ suffered a great suffering, and he suffered on our behalf. And the implication of this preceding verse to Romans chapter 8, verse 18, is found there in verse 17, and it says, we will see that glory if we indeed are those who suffer with him. He suffered. And there is a sense in which when we talked about that fact that Christ becomes our new corporate head, that when Christ suffered on the cross, we suffered with him. Because he was dying in our place. He was paying for our sin. We pointed out last week that not only did Christ suffer, but Paul even suffered. And I pointed you to his epistle, second letter to the Corinthian church, where he went down, you remember that long list of things that he had been through, almost, you know, and he said it was kind of a foolish thing for him to do, but he needed to do it so that to get a point across for them. But he went through all that he had gone through. He had been beaten. He had been whipped with a cat of nine tails. He had been shipwrecked. He had been put in prison. He had been left stoned and left for dead. All of that was suffering that Paul thought was worthwhile doing. How many of you in your faith, if you had to go through that, would remain true? Yeah, we don't have anybody putting machine guns to our chest, do we? We don't have anybody tying us to a stake and saying, either deny Christ and live, or don't deny Christ and die. But you know that is happening all over the world, even right now. You think we're civilized, we're in the modern age, but the reality is there are people groups that are so anti-God, so anti-Christian, that they would rather kill Christians than see them live. Paul suffered for the sake of the gospel. Jesus suffered to pay sin's penalty. I think as we think about the context, remember in Romans chapter 7, Paul suffered because of his own sin. The things that I want to do, those are the very things I don't do, and the things that I know I should be doing, I don't do those, and the things I don't want to do, those are the ones I do. I want you to notice verse 22, though, of Romans chapter 8, because our friends in suffering, in the department of suffering, are a lot broader than we might originally think. You're not alone. Whatever you've gone through, you know, that's something as I walked through my wife getting cancer and dying of cancer, it was a real eye-opener to the fact that I am not alone in suffering. There are a lot of people out there that are suffering. I've always had a compassionate heart, a pastor's heart. When people suffer, when people hurt, I hurt. But there was something about walking through that journey which opened my eyes to, in a broader way, to understand that, you know, this suffering bit is not all that uncommon. But according to what Paul writes here, it's everywhere. Verse 22, for we know that the whole creation groans. The very creation, the very handiwork of God groans. Earth, animal life, plant life, creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. Now I want to remind you when this all started. It started in the Garden of Eden. And if you go and check out Genesis chapter 3, you will see the suffering that began. And it was something that God placed a curse upon humanity. Adam was told, you're going to now have to labor and earn a living and eke out a living by the sweat of your brow every time I pull a weed. It's a reminder. You know, there are... How many of you enjoy your work? There are fun things about work, aren't there? As I read through what God did in Genesis chapter 3, though, I think that we can all kind of understand work would have been a lot more pleasurable, a lot more fulfilling, had the curse not been placed upon this earth. It got harder when God placed that curse. And I dare say there is something about everybody's job that we don't like. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains. Notice the picture that Paul uses, the pains of childbirth. Interesting, isn't it? Because that was one of the very things that God cursed Eve with in the garden. You're now going to have pain in childbirth because of your part in disobeying me. Not only that, there's going to... Another curse is this tension that would be between the husband and the wife, the fight for control, who would be the lead. And what Paul says is that all of creation is groaning and suffering that. You're not alone. So maybe I'm overstating this, maybe I'm making too much of this, but I think it's important for us to understand the foundation of suffering. I don't want us to miss the foundation of suffering, which we find in the context as well. We groan because of why? Maybe that's not the proper English way to put the question. Why do we groan? Why do we suffer? Well, there's a lot of reasons that Paul gives in this text, but what I will say for sake of time is I'll get to the bottom line. It's because of sin. We groan and we suffer because of sin. What wasn't right, there was something not right, and what wasn't right is that sin entered into the world. That wasn't part of God's original design. Now, God allowed it. He's sovereign. He allowed it. He had a reason for allowing it. He created man and women in his own image. He didn't make us robots. He allowed us to choose. That wasn't a mistake on God's part. But Adam and Eve suffered because of their sin. They suffered the loss of the garden. They suffered the loss of close fellowship with God. They suffered turmoil and having to eke out daily living. They suffered the pain of childbirth and so forth. We as the human race suffer by inheriting a sinful nature. Remember how we started out Romans chapter 1? We start out God listing all those sins and God giving mankind over because they denied him. So we've been given over to a sinful nature. The reality is that all of creation has been negatively impacted by sin. So we suffer because sin entered into the world. Christ suffered on the cross, as verse 18 or 17 alludes to, Christ suffered on the cross to pay for the penalty of sin. Paul kept preaching and presenting the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, because there were many, thousands upon thousands, millions upon millions, that were separated from God, and he wanted to get the word out of how a relationship could be restored. Paul suffered for the advancement of the gospel. And we suffer. According to this text, the context here, we suffer because we're waiting for something. In fact, all of creation is suffering because we're waiting for something. What are we waiting for? Verse 17 again, and if children, heirs also, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ. Well, we're waiting for our inheritance. We haven't got it. It's future. We're waiting for it. And if indeed we suffer with him, so that we may also be glorified with him. We're waiting for a glorification process. We're waiting for an inheritance and we're waiting for glorification. Verse 19, verse 22, verse 23 indicates there's an interesting phrase in all of those verses. Look at those verses. Verse 19, for the anxious longing of creation waits eagerly for the revealing, and here's the phrase, of the sons of God. I said, well, wait a minute. I'm a son of God. I'm a child of God. I'm a daughter of God. I've been redeemed. They don't have to wait any longer. I'm here. No. I'm not arguing you if you're a child of God. I'm not saying, no, you're not. I'm saying, great for that. But this is not saying that. What it's looking for is towards a future fulfillment. Listen, do you see this? Verse 19, for the anxious longing of creation waits. Creation right now is looking towards the future for the revealing of the sons of God in a full and complete and whole state. In other words, creation is waiting for the children of God to be the children of God in every facet of the meaning of that term. Creation is waiting for the children of God not to be struggling with the sin nature that Paul was talking about clear back in Romans chapter 7 that he still struggles with. We're waiting for the children of God to really be the children of God in every way, shape, or form. Verse 22 and 23, for we know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. And not only this, but also we ourselves having the first fruits of the Spirit. I circled that in my Bible because that's a down payment. We don't have it all, but we've got a down payment. Having the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly for the adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. Paul talked in Romans chapter 7 about that struggle with the body. And we're all groaning and we're all suffering because we have to put up with ourselves. And we have to put up with other sinful people who haven't quite arrived yet. And we're all waiting for that future day when we not only have been placed positionally into the family of God, but that we are actually there. We've seen the adoption papers signed, sealed, and delivered, and our bodies have been redeemed. We're waiting for that day. Really, we're waiting for hope to kick in. Do you notice verse 20, verse 24 and 25? Look at verse 20. For the creation was subject to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it. Stop there for a moment. We just went through a quick synopsis of what happened in the garden. That happened because God made it happen. God subjected it. God's the one that did it. The curse was from God upon humanity. He put that curse there. But why? And Paul has two little words which are very cool at the end of verse 20. He did it in hope. Now, this isn't a hope so hope I wish I win the lottery kind of hope. This is a in hope, I know it's certain it's going to happen the way I want it to happen hope. God placed humanity under a curse because he wanted to work in the hearts and lives of men and women to draw them unto himself. And he did that with that in mind. Verse 24. For in hope, there's something about hope. It's future, isn't it? It's always future oriented. For in hope we have been saved. Notice that's a done deal. We have been, it's past tense, have been, it's past. If you have put your faith and trust in Christ, it's speaking of you, you have been. It's done. For in hope we have been saved, but hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what he already seen? But if we hope for what we do not see with perseverance, we wait eagerly for it. We're looking forward with a certainty of what God is going to do. Now I want to point you very quickly as we conclude back to Romans chapter 8, verse 18. I don't know that I pointed this out before, but when Paul says, "For I consider that the suffering," it's not singular, it's plural. The sufferings. "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time," there are all kinds of sufferings. And within the context of what we find here in the book of Romans, I would like to say this. If God is allowing you to go through a suffering, whatever it is, whatever hardship, whatever difficulty it is, he has a reason for it. And I assure you, it's not a bad reason. God sometimes allows us to go through hardships to knock away the sin of our life. Maybe we're going through a hardship because we're prideful and he wants to knock off pride. But it's for our good. Maybe we're going through some difficulty because we have never acknowledged God as God. We have never come to a saving relationship with him. We have never even thought about it. And he allows us to go through some difficulty to get us to a point where we have to say, "I can't handle this on my own. I got to find somebody that can help me with this." You've heard the saying, "There are no atheists in foxholes." When the bullets are flying, when things are hitting the fan, so to speak, when there are difficulties in life, oftentimes it's that very moment in our lives. Do you know that there are a lot of guys who make professions of faith after they go out to prison? And some of those are actually genuine professions of faith after they go out to prison. Many of them are to try to get ahead. You know, because if you do certain things, you can impress the warden and get, you know, and the parole hearings and all that. So they have ulterior motives. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen too. But some of those really get right with God during that time period because of the difficulties of life that they're facing. And friends, that's a good thing. It's a good thing for us to suffer if we allow God and we realize that God is working for our good. And as we look at the context of this verse, it's really this idea of he wants to take those who are his own and to bring them into a right relationship with him. He wants them, as they go through the pain and as they go through the suffering, he wants them to be strengthened. And he wants them to be godly. And he wants them to walk with him and trust him fully. And all those future things, the inheritance, the right relationship, the restored body, that's out there. But we have to endure the suffering because we have to deal with sin on an ongoing basis.